We have another question.
I'm not sure if you can answer my question, but I wanted to know, if you're considered a citizen and you do commit a crime and you get sent to INS, I mean, you go into the federal system first, you go to INS, and they do deport you, but they say you can come back in 5 years. It's like, I wanted to know, they said that you, if you have a threat on your life to the country that you're being sent back to, that they won't let you go there. But the person that I'm asking about, they had a threat on their life, and now they end up dead. So I wanted to know, like, what could you do about that? If you could sue the state over here for that or something.
Yeah. I think something that's really unfortunate about what's happening right now, technically the U.S. isn't supposed to deport people who are citizens. And so if you were born in this country or if you're naturalized, you're considered a citizen and you're not supposed to get deported. Citizens have gotten deported anyway, you know, through incorrect legal processes. About the second part of the question, though, about you're not supposed to get deported if your life is threatened, what's really interesting, especially since September 11th, is that the United States has severely dropped the number of people to whom they grant asylum and and relief based on persecution. So what that means is that it used to be, before at least, that the U.S. was more likely to allow you to stay here if they thought that you were going to be killed abroad. But now what happens in the courtroom is that you can present your evidence. You can show scars on your body. You can talk about, you know, the fact that you may have been, like, raped and beaten and stabbed somewhere else and you're afraid to go back. But the judge might still say to you, and is more likely than not to say to you these days, you know, it doesn't matter, I can't let you stay here, you don't meet the burden of proof. And so what's really a hoax about this all, this brings up a very good point. We talk about the laws, you know, we talk about these laws are bad, but we also have to look at how they're enforced and how the politics have entered the courtrooms. And I think that's sort of what you describe as happening to your friend, and I'm sorry to hear that, is a classic example of that.
I kind of wanted to go back to your question before, because it's something I think about all the time, right? It's like, how can the work that we do really be building a movement rather than just addressing an issue? And so Audre Lorde has this quote that I really like that says, there's no such thing as a single issue struggle because we do not lead single issue lives. And I think some kind of the danger of what is happening sometimes is that, as they see, we feel like this is the issue, right? And so working at a youth organization, our young people are facing all these issues, and this is one of them. And so for us, it's really a challenge to always be meeting all of those needs in a holistic way, you know, to be dealing with their academic issues, to be dealing with issues of identity, with issues of immigration, with all of these different things, but acknowledge the fact that as whole people, we have a myriad of issues, and this is one of them. And I think that at SIA, like, one of our challenges is how to be able to move from issue-based work to movement-building work, is to really be like, okay, you know, to work with our young people and to be like, this is an issue we face. How can we use how that politicized us and how that made us feel to really start building links with other communities and to really start seeing the connections between our issues and other people's issues, how we experience immigration law, how, you know, Mexicans experience immigration law, and to kind of start drawing those connections.
And also, too, I mean, to really build a strong movement, I really think that it can't just be organizing, it can't just be campaigns, it can't just be advocacy. It has to be services. Mm-hmm. These two types of field cannot coexist one without the other, because you need both of them, because especially for folks who are, like, underprivileged, who are folks of color, who are queer, who are women, you know, they're not going to get these services. So not only do we need, you know, people to put them in positions of leadership to advocate for themselves, but they need services. You know, I can't talk about, yo, I shouldn't be going to jail if I'm worrying about, yo, I'm hungry. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, we have to push service-based organizations to really start incorporating some type of organizing within their services. Because I believe if we don't do that and get those two together, then we will never have a strong movement. We will always have a movement that is weak on one aspect. Mm-hmm. Because people are not going to stay dedicated. They're not going to stay connected if they have to worry about where they're going to sleep, where they're going to eat, or where they're going to get medical care. You know, if we can put those two together, then we can move towards a place where we can really, you know, change the shift of power within this country. Mm-hmm.
I think that's it's a really hard thing to do, but it's also really critical. I mean, for us, it's always hard. We're trying to organize, and at the same time, at any given time, we work with over 100 detainees providing services. And if we didn't do that, they wouldn't be able to organize for the long term. To this larger question of movement building, mm-hmm. I think this is so important because one of the things that we always see in ally communities of people not affected, particularly non-immigrants, is that there's this immediate desire to go and sort of work with, you know, people being deported and work with affected communities. But there is so much work that needs to happen in citizen, all-American, white or non-white citizen communities around education, around building support structures and systems, providing some of these services so that the community is under attack. Can organize.
What's your question?
Hi, my name is Conrad Aderer. I've been working on a documentary for some time on this issue, and I'm just wondering if anyone here has maybe a broader vision of how legislatively things could be changed, because I've seen that pretty much both on the Democratic and Republican sides, there's pretty solid support for these kinds of laws. And is there any plan in place to actually influence people who have the power to vote on the next time this legislation comes up? I know in The Voice there was an article about Schumer being behind a new bill which I believe changes surveillance powers and will also impact immigrants and will enable things like mosques to be monitored and tracked. Yeah. But, you know, getting on the street is one thing and it's valuable, but we've seen recently that vast numbers of people don't necessarily change certain policies.
What's interesting, though, legislatively, before September 11th happened, literally days before September 11th happened, there were bills on the floor to undo some of the detention and deportation laws. So there were actually Republican and Democrats alike that were saying, oh, wow, we're deporting far too many people. Let's roll some of this back. And so it really was devastating to get that entire platform knocked out of there. You know, there was an entire campaign around fixing 1996, so to speak, and that got knocked out of the water. What's interesting about Chuck Schumer, and I mean, I encourage everyone here to know this about him, to call up his office, you know, to give him obnoxious calls because, God, he deserves it. What's interesting about Chuck Schumer is he was a staunch advocate of expanding the grounds of detention and deportation. We are in an immigrant-heavy state. You know, something that's really cute to note is that 15% of U.S. families are mixed status. At least one parent is not a citizen. At least one child is a citizen. New York, that number is way higher. So you're talking about a lot of families that can get torn up by this stuff, right? Chuck Schumer heavily, heavily advocated for the expansion of detention and deportation laws. Why? There are a couple of reasons why. For one, he likes to posture as tough on crime. I'm sure there are plenty of issues that go along with that. Another thing that's important to keep in mind is that these laws enable the state governments to get more money from the federal government. So there's an interplay between budgets there. New York State has it in its interest to actually expand these laws to demand more money from the federal government, therefore, to actually enforce them or to get that money in there. So, like, there's a lot going on in Schumer's head, but it's certainly not accountable to our constituency.
Just also to address some of what you're talking about legislation and mass movements, I think all the legislation that's happening right now is a stopgap. It's to undo things. We're swimming upriver. You know, so we're trying to end police-INS collaboration in New York because it undermines public safety, it endangers communities. You know, we're trying to end the special registration program. We're trying to stop these post 9/11 policies from getting created. But none of that is going to fundamentally change, and none of the agenda is not going to shift until there is a mass movement, which is, like Shreya was saying, not single issue, not relegated to immigrants' rights stuff, but encompasses things like people in Chinatown getting denied FEMA benefits because they didn't have access, encompassing things like civil service for gay people. It's going to involve all of those things, and I think we're putting that together now. And so we shouldn't write off the idea of a mass movement of people that is building today, I think, and that I think is going to continue to build until we are finally in a position to not have to worry about people like Chuck Schumer, because people like Chuck Schumer aren't going to be saying the things that they're saying today.
And if they are, they wouldn't have any power to enforce it.
Right. I think there's another question? Yes.
This is a very etheric question. You know, I've heard this all my life. I've heard the prejudices that were against my nationality, which was Italian. So it's the same thing. It just keeps going. It just keeps changing faces. It just keeps going. In this lifetime, Do you really think there's a chance for peace? Is there, you know, this college, this guy that just said at college he did this stuff. Is this going to happen to you guys? Are you going to get a part of the system? Are you going to, you know?
I think that's an excellent question to perhaps not try to even answer right now, but hopefully optimistically believe, yes, there is a possibility for this. We're not here today just to sort of like, you know, mentally pat one another on the back. But part of the impetus for this show was to think, how do we need to reconfigure? And we certainly do. So what I want to put out there is a concrete step that you all can take is on Saturday, April 26th, a whole bunch of people that are facing detention and deportation are going to be rallying at Union Square at 1 p.m. saying stop the deportations now. I encourage everyone watching, everyone here, to join these immigrants and continue a dialogue that we're simply starting right now and of course need to expand and grow and develop into. So thanks a lot for joining us, and I hope that we all continue to talk about these issues without beyond the usual suspects as well. Thank you.